Session number 26359.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 4. So we're at Hill 112, and you had some hand-to-hand fighting there.
It was very close quarter fighting. Frequently we came on a one-hole pit in which a German had dug and probably covered over. We passed by it, he'd come up and shoot you either in the back or shoot the following up troops. And that happened with other pits as well. I saw one wounded SS man being helped by my own company stretcher bearer. He pulled a pistol while being helped. He had to be shot. He was an SS. In this particular battle, we found many Hitler youth from the Hitler Jugend. Boys of 14, perhaps, fighting. Fanatics.
How well trained were they?
I don't know how well trained they were, but all I know is they fought as if they knew what they were doing. They could handle weapons well, and they were resolute. So this fighting went on through the cornfields. How we got past with those machine guns, those German 42, firing those rapid lines, I do not know. Maybe it was the cornfields. Maybe our own tanks were coming up, firing their machine guns forward. Our own 25-pounders maybe kept their heads down a bit. Whatever it was, resolutely, steadily, we were able to advance through these cornfields against the SS. There were these young West Country soldiers who had not fought before, able to mix it with these well-practiced, experienced German panzer troops. Very good. And so the battle went on. Well, that was 5 o'clock we started. And in that time, we advanced steadily till about 8. And by 8, we'd reached a road, which was just below 112. And in that time, a lot of casualties had been inflicted on us. As I said earlier, we had witnessed, though we didn't realize quite how badly they'd been hit. On our left flank, the three battalions of 130 Brigade, two Dorset, and one Hampshire, I think it was, being really defeated. So the day ended really in a draw. We had not got to the top of Hill 112. We had not captured it. The Germans were still sitting on it. A great many casualties had been inflicted, both sides. And somehow we held our line and dug in what remained of the 43rd Wessex Division, leading two brigades.
So that once you had dug in, what were your duties as a young officer? I mean, you had to assess, I suppose, what troops you've got left and
we dug in, and when the opportunity arose, well, I had to be careful, of course. One would get up. I personally was very lucky I didn't dig a trench, because I either had a batman or a sergeant major who willingly dug one, and I could share it. Meanwhile, I was visiting the other troops, seeing that they were dug in, seeing that they were aware of what had happened and where we were, making sure their weapons were ready to fire again, checking if reinforcements of resupply of ammunition was wanted, all that sort of thing.
What sort of morale did you find amongst your men?
On that occasion, excellent. They were shaken, but in no way disheartened. Mm-hmm. But they knew worse was to come. And so we waited. Strangely, the British tanks, when night falls, withdraw from the front line to what they call a lager area, where I presume they replenish with petrol and ammunition and food, and presumably get a rest. I didn't quite understand that. They said, well, we withdraw partly also, so we do not draw fire on you, infantry. The Germans, on the other hand, had no rules like this. They always stayed up in the front and operated at night as well, which we did not tend to do in our tanks. And that night, the Germans certainly operated with their tanks. And from behind 112, where there were these Panzer tanks, Tiger tanks, and with heavy artillery, they put in a counterattack. Now, that meant the tanks coming, and the German tanks were frightening, really. They were so large and so ominous. And they advanced right towards us, and their tank tracks were so wide, if they'd swiveled their tank tracks round crossing a trench, they'd have crushed us. I actually had a German tank go over me with its great tank, very frightening, right over my trench, pressing the earth down but not burying me.
Did he know you were there?
He didn't know, no. But he knew a bit later, because my men let them go over and then got up themselves with their Piats, which are anti-tank guns with a shell in them, and fired at them. They make no effect at all on German armour, but they make an effect if you can hit their tracks. And on quite a few occasions we were able to hit German tracks and slow them up and swivel them round, and then get at them. Meanwhile, it wasn't just tanks that were coming, but the German infantry were meant to be following. And that is when the gunners showed their worth by putting down a volume of fire on the German infantry coming up. Therefore, we were spared hand-to-hand fighting in dark, with German infantry among us. They didn't make it. Eventually, the night was full of tanks on fire, our tanks, their tanks. And it was an awe-inspiring sight. And the night wore on. The next day was slightly quieter. But there were sporadic attacks. On one occasion, the divisional commander said, I've only got one battalion of reserve left, and that was the Cornwall Light Infantry. They have got to have one final attack and get 112. And they were put in, and they were led by a young 26-year-old officer who I think had come from the Somersets. Anyway, he was commanding this battalion, and he was brilliant. And he led these soldiers up in and mixed it with the Germans on Hill 112, and there was very, very close firing and fighting there. But the Germans resisted strongly with their tanks and their infantry. And they wiped out this battalion. So much so that the commanding officer was killed. All the officers were killed or wounded. And they were withdrawn with about two officers and 40 or 50 men. And still we had failed to capture Hill 112. They got up to a place called Cornwall Wood to this day. And that was the end of the effort to get 112. The 53rd Welsh Division then relieved us for some reason, and we were withdrawn 4 miles back, where we were reinforced with those we had lost. In 2 days' battle, that 2 days, the 43rd Wessex Division had lost 2,800 men. 2 days. The sad part is they were the cream of the division. And 2,800 out of a division of 15,000 doesn't seem a lot, but it is mostly infantrymen. A division is about 9,000 or 10,000 infantrymen. We'd lost a third.
How many of you lost in your battalion? Do you know? And
we'd lost about 50.
What effect did this have on your manpower and your being able to go on?
Well, they were reinforced. They were replaced very quickly.
Really?
Replaced within 2 days.
Really?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. With all, mind you, we were getting short of infantry, but in those early days, infantry reinforcements were brought up quickly, and we were reinforced 4 or 5 miles back. Mm-hmm. We are told the Germans in that battle lost about 3,000. Well, these casualties are nothing compared with the First War casualties, which went into 50 and 60,000 and all sorts of... But I'm just talking about one division in a two-day modern war battle.
How tired were your men at the end of this?
They were exhausted. You can't... company quartermaster sergeants were very good. They brought up a hot meal at night if they possibly could. I can't remember getting any that night, but they also try to bring up some hot breakfast sometimes, but that isn't. They were marvellous. And again, they had been trained to do this. They were about, it could be 800, 1,000 yards behind in cover, under cover, doing their cooking, getting a hot meal ready, and then somehow getting it up in the dark. Sometimes they could, sometimes they were blown up. So when we got back, we were reinforced. And that was the 10th, 12th of July, we went back. On the 18th of July, I seem to remember, we were told, we've got to continue this attack on 112. The Wiltshire Regiment, 129 Brigade, which is the 4th and 5th Wiltshires, and the 4th Somersets, will go forward tomorrow. And they will capture that area where the Dorsets were slaughtered. And that is the left-hand end of Hill 112, the village of Malto. You'll go in tomorrow. We were a bit startled. We'd seen what had happened to the Dorsets. Anyway, we were able to make daylight reconnaissance because a bit of leeway had been made from Caen, where the Canadians had attacked on the other side of the river, and therefore the Germans were not able to fire sideways onto the area we had been fighting in previously, i.e. where the Dorsets had been hit up. So therefore, Germans had been moved from that area on the other side of the River Orne. So we were able to do a good reconnaissance of this battle, to capture this area of Melto. And we had the 4th Battalion on the left and the 5th Battalion on the right, each with a squadron of Churchill tanks, Somerset Light Infantry, in reserve. The gunners again put down a very, very powerful barrage for us, and we attacked at dawn on about the 18th or 19th July. It was a good battle. It was a set-piece battle. The tanks were well forward with us. The tank commander was a wonderful chap. These names, I forget them. I remember well now that parachute commander. His name was Martin Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Martin Lindsay. Right. And he went to the Gordon Highlanders when he was removed from command. Mm-hmm. After the war, he became an MP, and I think he was removed from that job too. He wrote a book. Yeah. Martin Lindsay. Right. The tank commander... I remember his name too. But he insisted on getting out of his tank and walking with my commanding officer, Colonel Ted Luce, and in order that orders could be given freely and they could discuss it. And this battle surged forward. On this occasion, because the adjutant had been killed, our adjutant, I was pulled out of a company and made to be the adjutant for this battle, which means I was able to see the battle from the command vehicle, which was a little bit behind, and to be in touch on the radio with brigade headquarters and tell them how our battle was going, and also to be in touch with the 5th Wiltshire. So I saw I had quite a different sort of view, rather laid back a bit. Commanding officer was up forward, I was back with the command vehicle.
How much information was coming into the command vehicle?
All the time. All the time the companies were back. We are doing this, we are doing that, can we have more guns, can we have some help here? And also you'd get it from the next door battalion, and you would relay to brigade headquarters, and brigade headquarters beyond to it. It was a very good wireless set we had, each battalion headquarters. So there was quite a good bit of communication. And this battle went very well. There was a bit of hand-to-hand fighting. And we went through the area where the Dorsets had been slaughtered 10 days earlier. I remember it was a very hot summer, and they had been lying there unburied. The Germans didn't touch them. We had no troops of our own to bury or remove them, and the bodies were beginning to smell. It was as disconcerting as that. And there were their burnt-out vehicles, and these dead Dorsets and Hampshires lying about. Very, very unpleasant. But we had to go through them. And on the left, the 5th, came to a big chateau in the middle of Melto, where the remnants, the Germans had beaten them back by now. The remnants of the Germans were there. I think they had been relieved by some other battalion than the SS that were there before. The SS were still slightly right on 112, Melto as Wehrmacht. And we attacked the chateau, and out came a major with his hands up and said, will you give us time to remove our wounded? And we said, surrender. No, right, we said, you can't remove your wounded, and we'll go on with the battle. That went on all night. We smashed the chateau to bits. We killed about 400 people in that area in that short while. And eventually at dawn, 400 more surrendered. And that's the fourth Wiltshire's. The fifth on the right were having a battle for the rest of the village, and they were successful also. Therefore, at the end of the day, we felt we'd won the battle. Just as we were feeling okay, from behind 112 towards Malto came a troop of Tiger tanks, these tanks which are fearful. Within 10 seconds, they had knocked out seven of our tanks with their 88mm guns. And we thought, oh, Lord, this is now going to be a counterattack. But we were able to call on a cab rank of Typhoon fighter aeroplanes, which were on call in Normandy. And they came down with their rockets and shot up two or three of these Tigers, who then withdrew again behind 112. The battle of that area was over, and in fact, for some strange reason, 112 folded up, and the Germans, having been defeated at Malto, having had so many casualties on 112, were withdrawn south, and a 53 Welsh division, I remember, took over. And we were then withdrawn, ready to break out of Normandy.
Right. Can I just ask you, when the chateau at Malto, when the German requested leave to bring out the wounded,
yes.
How was that physically done? Did he come out?
Yes, with a white flag, with a white flag. And he came out, and we had a couple of officers who spoke very good German. He spoke in German. He asked if they could bring the wounded out. No, unless you surrender. So that was the end of 112. And it had taken from the 6th of June till about the 20th of July to win that area. So Monty, he said he'd achieve what he wanted to do, but what he had said was, I will capture Caen in the first few days. He didn't. And it was not till about this time that we got Caen.
When your men had gone into Hill 112 on the 10th of July, and then they'd come out, and then they'd gone back in on the 18th or the 19th.
Yeah.
That was asking a lot of them, wasn't it? Because they always say it's quite easy to go into battle the first time. It's going back the second time which takes the courage.
I don't know whether that's so or not. We went in with a lot of new boys who hadn't had a battle before. You had a few left who had 6 weeks fighting. I noticed no lowering of morale,
really?
Which is really what you're asking, at that time.
Right.
But we had taken an awful dashing in the first few weeks in Normandy, especially of infantry and tanks. And if it had not been for the gunners, I doubt if we'd have done so well. We trained with them so well. They were up forward with us the whole time. It was an example of careful training and careful planning that enabled us to meet these experienced German fighters. We hadn't fought. We hadn't seen a day's action, a lot of us, but we were able to do it.
Did you notice any gaps in your training at all? Or it sounds as though, you know, things were... Your training had been the right training for the job.
Well, we were told we'd have big physical barriers to cross, and we trained, marched 100 miles through there. But never in that battle did we ever march more than about 10 or 15 miles. We were never required to do more. And quite often, I look back and I think the training was harder than the actual fighting.
But I suppose it got you a level of fitness, though, didn't it?
Level of fitness. But what we did find, of course, was, and this has been said many times, that while the Germans were very, very experienced, what we were up against was their superior weapons. Every weapon they had was better than ours. The Luger pistol was better than our 3.8 or 4.5 pistol. The German Schmeisser submachine gun was better than our Sten gun. Faster, better made, easier to load. The German machine gun was superior by far to the British Bren gun in its firing, its speed, its weight. The German medium machine gun, about level. The German mortars were better than ours. Faster, heavier bombs. And the German 88mm gun was better than our artillery, but we had more artillery. The German tank was superior by far to anything we could put in the field, right to the very end. And had the German had air superiority or even level fighting with the Luftwaffe, it would have been a different picture. But we had air superiority, and we had tremendous supplies of ammunition coming up for our guns, which really won the day. But there's no doubt about it. The German small arms and their weapons in general were better than the British. So if you ask any shortcomings, that was what we found.
Mm. Were you aware of that at the beginning, or was this something you learned?
We learnt it the hard way. Mm. We learnt it the very hard way. We, of course, knew that they had these things because of North Africa, where Rommel had his tanks and his guns and his 88 millimeters, and where the German infantry were good. So we had good information about it, and we were ready for what came, but we knew that they had better stuff than we had. And that was the end of the Normandy battle, which was
Did you get a time to pull back and rest after that?
Usually you had a few days rest. Mm. On this occasion, we had 2-3 days rest, which meant we had shower baths, mobile baths came up, and we had clean shirts and underclothes and socks and things given out to us, and we were able to rest. Of course, that isn't much rest for those of us who had to reform our companies. Mm. And the quartermasters brought all the stuff up, but we might have had a bit more sleep. And so on. But of course, the rest areas were only 3 or 4 miles back, and they were under shell fire quite often. So it was touch and go.